buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside. I pulled the choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful, it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you just have to put up with me because we're going to be talking about car repair, car problems. If you want to talk about new cars, you want to talk about recalls, you want to talk about all kinds of stuff, then I'm more than happy to help you. The easy way to get in is just give us a call. The lines are wide open right now. Jeremy is waiting for you, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my friend Bob at Quality Transmission. There's hardly a week that goes by that I don't get a call from a happy customer about Quality Transmission in Tempe. They say Bob is knowledgeable, that Steve is great, how much money they saved, how happy they were that I recommended Quality Transmission. I know you'll be happy as well. Everybody doesn't get happiness when they go to a transmission shop, but the real sin here is that when it is an easy repair and represented as something completely different, that's the sin. So if you're looking for transmission work, you can go anywhere you want, but I would suggest that Quality Transmission on McClintock North of University in Tempe, Quality Transmission, is the place that I would send you. Okay, last week we had a pretty rambunctious show. So I'm going to give you some updates, and I'll tell you what's happened since then. Last week we had a very nice gentleman, Ken, call up, and he had an S10 Blazer, and it was a V6 automatic, and he had taken it in, and the repair shop said that he had two problems. Number one, it needed motor mounts, and number two, it had oil leaks. And then he read from the paperwork that let's start with the oil leaks. Both valve covers were leaking. Those are on the top driver's side and passenger side of the motor. The oil pan's leaking, that's at the very bottom. The rear main seal's leaking, that's at the very back. And I ask him, you know, they've got every part of the motor that can possibly leak except the front seal enumerated. How much oil do you have on your driveway? And he said, none. None. And you have to believe him. I mean, he's not going to. And I said, well, if you don't have any oil leaking on the driveway, then what are we fixing? And he says, you know, I don't know. And so I said, I would really appreciate it if you would send me a copy of that ticket so that I can look at the ticket. And I understand the technical jargon, so let me do that. Let's talk about your motor mounts. The motor mounts are pretty expensive. There's three of them, and it's going to cost a lot of money to replace all three of those, $500, $600, $700. And I said, do you have any vibration in park, reverse, neutral, or drive? Any vibration that comes and goes depending on where the shifter's at. Typically at idle, the steering wheel will shake, the seat of your pants will shake, the whole car will shake, the rearview mirror will shake. Maybe it'll go away when you go to neutral. Maybe it'll go away when you go to reverse. But it could be a problem where in reverse it vibrates and it doesn't in neutral and drive, or vice versa. It can vibrate and drive. He says, none of that. None of that. I said, okay. He says, but also, Mark, I went to one of your best shops, and they told me the motor mounts were bad too, and they quoted me a price, and actually it was a little bit higher than what I had already been quoted, so I went back to the first shop and had the motor mounts done. I said, okay, well, send me all the paperwork. So he did. Very nice man, he did. Here's what, I haven't changed my mind. And if I make a mistake, phew, listen, I've spent half my life raising my hand saying I'm sorry, so I'm not shy about that, but I'm also not shy about he doesn't have any oil on the ground. And when they start talking about oil leaks, they're talking about this. Weeping and seeping. Your oil pan is seeping. Your valve covers are seeping. Folks, there is no other explanation other than they want to take your money for something they see, and that's the worst word that they can use. They want to represent seeping as something of concern, when in reality your brand new car can seep from gaskets at 5,000 miles old. That doesn't mean we can do anything about it. That doesn't mean we should do anything about it. Seeping is a word used by technicians and service writers because they can't say, your motor mounts are broken. The driver's side motor mount on your V6 is broken. Have you ever accelerated kind of hard from an intersection and about halfway through the intersection there's a big bump? Yes, I have. Okay, you got lots of miles on it. I want to bid the left front motor mount. But in reality, because you got a lot of miles, I want to offer you the option to do the other two. Now you have one on each side of the engine, driver's side, passenger side, and you have one in the back by the transmission. You have three mounts. It's kind of like putting a new shoe on one foot and an old shoe on the other, but it's up to you. There's not a significant amount of savings here because each mount is different. Each mount, the labor is different, and there's no duplication of labor. So if you want me to do one, I can fix the broken one, and I'll show you it when I'm done. But if you want me to do all three, here's your number. See, they can't say that when they say the motor mount is cracked. That's the word that was used, weathered. Give me a break. There is no way in God's green earth that a motor mount's bad because it's cracked or weathered. This is what you have to be careful of. If you're in doubt and that voice in your chest says something's wrong here, then just don't do it. But if you want to separate the real men from the voice, this is how you do it. Well, Joe, you say my motor mounts are cracked and weathered. Listen, why don't you do this? Why don't you just grab a piece of paper, maybe the back of your business card, and write down what mounts you're going to do. You know, two motor mounts, one transmission mount. Write down the total out-the-door price, and then write down the why they're bad, and then sign your name to it. They aren't going to do that. Nobody's going to sign their name when clearly you can drive from there down to the AG's office. No, you can't really, but let's just pretend you could. And you'd go down to the AG fraud division, and they had some automotive expert that would look at it and say, yep, they're trying to rip you off. Because cracked and weathered and seeping and weeping are not industry-accepted standards to defect a part. Folks, the economy's hit everybody hard. And this has been a growing problem since about 2008. Since 2008, 9, 10, it's got worse in 11, and it's really bad this year. I don't know if it's going to be better next year. Hopefully a lot of the bad guys will go broke. But the idea is that if you have to pay your bills on that big four-wheel drive diesel truck you have that you're still paying on, or the new house you just bought during the crunch or whatever, you're going to do what you have to do. And the shop is going to let the technicians feed on the sheep. Does that make sense to you? The shop is going to let the technicians feed on their sheep, because you're their sheep. So they're going to let the wolves take your bite out of you, because they make money. And of course, the technicians are the same way. Almost every technician is paid one form of commission or another. So a technician's going to, your power steering box is seeping. Don't let them do that. There is nothing wrong. If it's broken, you make them say broken. Is my motor mount broken? Is my motor mount bad? And if so, describe it to me. Now, Ken, I guess, didn't get his motor mount, so we can't really pass judgment on whether they need it or not. The shop that he said that was one of mine, unfortunately, they use the same words. And so I sent Ken's, without his name on it, without his email on it, I sent it to the shop and I said, here's what he said. Here's a tape of what he said on the air. He didn't name you. But I'd want you to learn from this, because motor mounts that are cracked and weathered, motor mounts that are sagging, compared to what sagging? Compared to what? It's just a common sense issue. But just, you want to be careful. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We also had Mark call in. He had an 05 Acura. And hang on just a minute. Let me tell the story, and then I'm going to get that horn honker. He talked about that they had diagnosed the catalytic converter right, And I wrote this down because I went back and listened to the tape. They diagnosed the catalytic converter bad, but then they said they really couldn't talk to the O2 sensors, but it was in his best interest to go ahead and do the O2 sensors because if they did them later, then it would cost more money. And folks, I disagree with that 100%. The O2 sensors are not, they're bolted 8 inches away from the catalytic converter. There is no duplication of labor. There is no do-over. Here's the problem with this. You can't condemn the cat if you can't talk to the O2 sensor in front and behind the cat. The front O2 sensor tells the computer that what's coming into the catalytic converter is laden with fuel. The catalytic converter is an oven, is a stove, it's a furnace. And as the gasoline comes into the catalytic converter, it's consumed. And when it goes out the back, what comes out of the back is the abundance of air. Now think about this. An oxygen sensor senses oxygen. If you stick an oxygen sensor in the tailpipe and everything is high to hydrocarbon, everything is gasoline, there is no oxygen, the oxygen sensor tells the computer, there's no oxygen in this pipe.
2 minutes.
Then as you go to the back of the converter, as the exhaust passes through the back of the converter and the hydrocarbons, the gasoline is burnt, what comes out of the back? Oxygen, carbon dioxide. So at the backside, the O2 sensor says, ooh, lots of oxygen. And the front one's going, ooh, no oxygen. That's what we want. How can you condemn the converter if you can't talk to the two O2 sensors? You have to do the O2 sensors first. The problem is this was never all about an O2 sensor, because the shop he talked about, he told me later who it was. And I have no respect for them at all. And the shop that he talked about has been doing this for years. And they create this perception that you need $1,700 and this is what's in your best interest, and nothing could be further from the truth. The fact of the matter is it's in their best interest and not your best interest. So that's the way it is. But Jeremy.
1 minute.
Who's on the phone?
We got Mike.
Okay, Mike, I promise we're going to take a quick break here. It's going to be like 2 minutes long, and you're going to be my first caller. If anybody else wants to join Mike and I, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. When you come back, get your pencils and paper out. I'm going to give you my email address because I know some of you are shy and you don't want to call in. I understand that. And I also want to tell you where you can also look at some of the blogs. I'm blogging for the Arizona Republic, and I usually take customer write-ins and then the solution and then the reply, and I post those on the blog. And there's some interesting ones. One of them I just posted was, I just spent $700 and I'm back to where I started. Those are the kinds of things we help you with. I have no axe to grind. I have no interest in taking your money. We'll be right back.
Legalized marijuana? Hugh Hewitt explains the downside.
I was so astonished by this. It's not medical marijuana.
Raised up from under my hood, and he shook his head and said, this ain't...
Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And I was going to give you my email address and also a website you can go to read about car stuff. And you can put it in your favorites if you so desire. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem.com. Salem is spelled like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M. If you write down this website, it's kind of a nifty one. It's called, here's, I'll spell it for you. A-Z as in zebra, C as in Charlie, and then the word voices, V-O-I-C-E-S. A-Z-C, Arizona, Robert, zebra, and then the word voices, it's all one word, .com. And then at the end of .com, put a /, and write cars, and you'll take you straight to the website where we kind of blog about cars, and we talk to people about cars, and you're welcome to join us anytime you want. Okay, we're going to tell you real quick that this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. He's a family-owned and operated company. He's been in the business up in Deer Valley since 1983. He can maintain, he can repair most make models, including diesels. And the best part about it is if Tom's not the best guy for your problem, he'll tell you so. There's no such thing as on-the-job training in Action Auto. All of his technicians are ASC certified, and he offers free roadside service, towing, and coast-to-coast 12-month, 12,000-mile warranty. And they have a rewards program where you can accumulate points to receive future discounts on your repairs. And I just bit my tongue. If you're looking for a good shop on the north side of town, Action Auto is located west of I-17 on Deer Valley Road. And if you don't have a shop, then give him a try, and I promise you'll be a satisfied customer. Speaking of customers, good morning, Custer. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing fine.
How can I help you?
I've got two questions related to the same thing.
Okay.
This is on my wife's 2005 Yukon half-ton Denali.
Okay.
6.0.
Okay.
All right, 120,000 miles. We've had it for a couple years. Water pump leak. Find out this out last Saturday morning. So I go to CarQuest after taking the water pump out. Not a problem getting it out.
Okay.
And, of course, there's multiple part numbers. So the guy pulls out a water pump. It looks exactly like the used one that I brought in. And I said, well, I'm glad you have this because I always seem to have trouble with multiple part numbers from GM. So he says, well, yeah, I got other listings, but that would be like if it was a Denali. And I said, oh, it is a Denali. So he pulls that one out, and we have all three laying side by side on the counter. They all look exactly the same. I can't tell diddly difference between them.
Okay.
So and the two are the same price, exactly.
Okay.
And they're the typical price. So I get the one that's for Denali, and, of course, both of them came with a typical type flat gasket for the thermostat.
Okay.
And also an O-ring, a small O-ring. And mine takes, and I'm sure you've seen this, it's kind of a quarter-inch thick type of squared O-ring with a little tab indicator, and it's got a slit around its inside circumference, which goes around the lip of the thermostat.
Okay.
So I said, well, do you have the kind like I'm showing here, because I brought in the old one? And he says, no, but I think I can order it. So anyway, I was on my way, physically, I was on my way to a funeral service, and I figured, I guess, that if they aren't even really too aware of that gasket, then maybe that's been updated to use the flat, traditional type gasket. And I don't know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I go to the funeral service, I come back, and, you know, the next morning, Sunday morning, I put on the stuff, and I figured, they don't offer that. Maybe the rubber gasket around the thermostat is supposed to be reusable. So I put it all together, and guess what? 10 minutes after running it, starts leaking out the thermostat housing.
Okay.
So I am able to find out. I am able to get one at AutoZone. That's the exact one. It's a Felpro for like $3. I drive down. I get that. I put it back together, and the leak problem is gone. So here's my two questions.
Okay.
What could be the difference between a 6.0 Yukon water pump and one for a 6.0 Yukon Denali? Okay, because I couldn't see anything, but they were different, but, you know, just in how maybe the rear part was, one I think was pressed on, one was bolted on.
Okay.
And the second answer is, had I used the typical thermostat gasket and just ditched the rubber one, so there'd be no external leak, would I have been okay?
Well, those are great questions.
Thank you.
They're just to the wrong person.
Oh.
Here's why. What were the name on the boxes of those three water pumps that you had laying there? What was the, you know, who made the water pumps?
They were just the CarQuest, and they were new. They were not rebuilt.
Okay. I don't have those problems. I mean, we order annually, we probably order $2 million worth of parts, and we don't have those problems. First of all, I think, but I'm not 100% sure, but my wife has a 2005 Denali. I think that the 6.0 only came in a Denali. It didn't come in a standard Yukon. So I don't know why he had three pumps up there.
One was my used one.
Okay.
I just took it in to match it up.
All right. I mean, you'd have to look at his catalogs. Usually, if there's a distinction, they'll call for the 8th or the 10th digit on the VIN number. So they'll say this part number for this 8th or 10th digit.
Right, or they'll ask me how many inches is the rear brake, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you know, we don't look up stuff like that anymore. We go to specific catalogs and computers that they already know. They already know. So I don't know why he has that. I don't know who built his pumps. I don't know where CarQuest is not building them. So CarQuest is getting them from someplace. So I don't know why he had. But if they call for two part numbers and it's for the same vehicle, and Denali, 05 Yukon, I can't explain that. Now, there should have been some kind of a footnote that said, for a 5-blade fan, use this one. For a 6-blade fan, use that one. Or it could say that if the production date on this is February 05 and lower, use this one. And if it's February 05, then use this. I don't know. And as far as the O-ring on the thermostat, I'd have to be there. I'd have to see it. But first of all, there's not any thermostat gasket, unless you tear it or break it or rip it up, that you can't put back together with some RTV. So, I mean, if you were out in the middle of nowhere and you had a tube of RTV and you had to take the thermostat out, I'm pretty sure I could get that thing to seal up.
Well, this rubberized one, like I said, it's rubber, has a little index mark, so the little vent toggle in the thermostat faces the same way. But it's about a quarter inch thick.
It doesn't make any difference what it looks like.
Well, it was
you're asking me to explain why he gave you this. How do I know that he didn't look up a Dodge? How do I know that you're asking me to answer a question about a thermostat gasket? He needs to answer that question because he could have given you a Dodge thermostat gasket, and they're not going to be interchangeable.
That was inside with the water pump. It was part of the water pump.
Okay, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. If the end result is you got a water pump on there and you got a gasket from AutoZone and you're home free.
Yeah.
But
do you think I would have been okay if I just used the traditional one and ditched that rubber one?
No, when we come back, we'll continue the conversation, but I got to take a break right now.
Okay.
When we get back, we have open lines available, 602-508-0960. Yes, sir. Good morning, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. This is a car show called Under the Hood. We're talking about car repair. And, Custer, I've had about 3.5 minutes to think about your dilemma, and let me just narrow it down for you.
Okay.
The quality of the parts you're going to get and the correctness of the parts you're going to get is going to depend on the brain power of the person standing in front of you. For no other reason other than they don't fit my niche, I don't do business with either one of the two places you talk about.
Okay.
And I can't afford to have someone guessing and holding my cars up. I can't afford that. I can't afford him. He should have asked you numerous questions to identify which vehicle you have.
Probably like whether I had electric fans or a fan driven with a fan clutch.
That could be one of 10.
Okay.
So I can't explain your thermostat gaskets scenario. I can't. We own two. I have a 5 and a 7. Denali, they both have 6.0s. They're both all-wheel drives. They're probably just like yours. The idea is I can't explain it, but accessing parts has a lot to do with the success of your job. So you might want to get on the internet. You might want to find a GM number. You might want to call them and ask them if they'll cross the GM number. You might want to call a Chevrolet dealership. You might want to ask them, because it's entirely possible they did take this cardboard O-ring gasket out and put an O-ring in. But all the parts we buy, if they're going to make a change like that, there's a note inside the box.
So Mark, that's a good question. So do you buy GM parts?
No.
Or do you NAPA or what?
No. I use a warehouse called a distributor. And the distributor sells the brands I like. Like you said, Felpro. Felpro is certainly one of them. 25% of our parts, of millions of dollars a year, has to be at the dealership level because nobody else has what we need. So 25 cents out of every dollar I spend on parts is at the dealership level. But I'm able to get far better front-end parts than I can buy at the dealer. Far better gasket sets than I can buy at the dealer. Far better rubber, far better brake shoes than I can buy at the dealer. Because there's no such thing as a Honda brake pad. They bought it from the lowest bidder. Chevrolet buys their parts from the lowest bidder. Ford, Chrysler, everybody buys their parts from the lowest bidder. So when I was at Goodyear in Nebraska, I could see the lines coming down, and I'm not allowed to tell you, but there was a whole lot of belts there that were of the They weren't of the Gatorback. The Gatorback is the Mercedes-Benz of Goodyear belts. Then you go back over here to level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and the Gatorback. Well, these belts are coming down with sleeves on them that came from different car manufacturers, and they were in like the number 3 line. And I sell Gatorback. So that should answer it. Thank you very much, Cusser Mike. You're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark.
Yes?
I really enjoy your show. Really,
thank you.
Really do. I had a question. Hey, on one of your theme songs, you know, that you just came back with, it had the name Ford, and last week when you played it, you said something about Jerry Lee Lewis.
I was wrong.
Okay. Could you tell me the name of that song?
Jeremy, where are you, buddy?
I know it's called Oh Lord, Mr. Ford, but I'm not sure the artist on it.
So just, we know that's the name on the title, Oh Lord, Mr. Ford.
Okay.
I think it's one of those 60 cowboys, like Jerry Lee Lewis or, you know, but I honestly, someone else told me I was wrong, and so I apologized for that.
Okay, that answers my question. Mark.
Wait, hold on just a minute. Jeremy, do we have that full song available?
You know, I think we do. I'd have to go grab it really quick.
Okay, hey. If we have the full song available, I want you to send me an email, and I'll send it to you.
Okay, I was going to ask you, what I was going to ask you was, and if this isn't, if you can't do it, that's okay.
2 minutes.
When you come back from a break this morning,
uh-huh.
Could you play it?
Well, let me tell you what happens. That's a great question, and thank you for bringing it up, because nobody else has ever answered it. We are only allowed to use, I think it's 30 seconds of a song. Before we have to notify the U.S. government and NATO so that they can properly bill us for 31 seconds of the song so we can pay the person that made the song.
Okay, I get you.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's why I always break in at about, sometimes 10 or 11, because if Jeremy tails the song in, I don't want to go past 30. He knows that.
Okay, I get you. Okay.
Hey, guys, you know what? A caller just called in.
Yeah.
Go. It's Jerry Reed.
Jerry
Reed?
Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I got the first name right.
Mark, you made my day. Thank you.
Okay, you betcha. Stand for that. You bet, Mike. If you want to, all you got to do is mark at marksalem.com. I'm pretty sure I have the whole song.
You know what? I'll do that.
Okay.
Do that.
All
thank
right.
you.
You're welcome. Sid, you're going to have to wait for the break, but I'll be back in 2 minutes to take care of you. Anybody else, you're welcome to come on in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And while I told you a few minutes ago that I sell Goodyear belts and hoses, I don't ever sell tires, and in a minute I'll tell you why. So, 602-508-0960, just a personal preference, and it's a decision that I get to make. Now, I'm not going to tell you who sang this song. I just tell you they're applicable to the show. I am Mark Salem, and we're going to take your call in just a minute. See it, I promise you, but I got to do this first. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my favorite couple, Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on the south side of Main Street, just east of Stapley. So Stapley, Main Street, east and south. Thompson's been in business since 1970. I think they're on the second or third generation. They're equipped to handle anything you need. They're a AAA approved shop. They're an ASE certified Blue Seal shop, which means the majority of their technicians have advanced degrees in auto repair. And Brian is on a TechNet council for CarQuest, where he helps create industry standards and the relationship, improve the relationship between those of us that work on cars and those that sell parts. And he was named the Business of the Year in 2009 by the Mesa Chamber of Commerce. So I'm proud to have Thompson's Auto Repair, Main and Stapley, on my best car repair shop list. Sid, you're up, buddy.
Yeah, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I own a new car, and I brought it in for the 15,000-mile service, you know, and
okay.
Naturally they want to sell you more things, you know, so I asked him what is it, you know, call for, and he tells me a group of things, and a throttle body adjustment and all that, and I says, it's only got 15,000 miles on it, and it was $200 and something. I says, no. I says, I know it needs the filters because I read my manual, you know, thing, you know. But he's saying, if you live in an area, this is, they don't tell you this when you're buying the car. They tell you, you don't have to service your transmission for 100,000 miles and all of that. But then when you get in there, they say, well, that's, if you live in a climate where it's over like 90-something degrees, 90 days in a row, you know, you can't do what the book says. You got to do what we says. You know, yeah. We recommend this. And I went to two other places, and I asked him, do I need this, what he's calling for? Because I use other, because I have four cars and the family. And they say, absolutely not. So I went back to him, and he says, well, it could affect your extended warranty or your warranty, you know, because it's so new. Do you agree with him?
No.
No.
No, that's BS, and I wish I could say the word, but I know I'm going to get fined if I do. Okay? Look, Sid. I wish I would have been there with you. I wish I could have been your son, and I could protect you. I would have said to him, you know, buddy, they didn't tell me this when we bought this doggone. You know, let me get the owner's manual and let me see in the owner's manual where the manufacturer of this car is calling for $200 worth of work at 15,000 miles.
And then,
you know, what it says in the owner's manual, it says that we have two different kinds of maintenance schedule. We have the Sunday go to meeting schedule, and then we have what we call the heavy duty schedule. Now, the heavy duty schedule says dirty, dusty conditions, stop and go traffic, hauling loads, extreme heat or cold. But you know what? Half the people in Phoenix don't even apply to that. Because half the people in Phoenix are not in that category. And we like to think that we're just the hell hole of the whole United States of America. And we're the hell hole for everybody in the world. And we aren't. GM doesn't even... Wait a minute. I'm on a roll. You don't get... GM...
Sorry.
No. GM doesn't even test here anymore. Nobody tests here anymore. There's a Nissan track out at Wickenburg, and I think they do tires. The bottom line is that is just self-serving. That's self-serving. Mm-hmm. If you need a throttle body adjustment, you would have an idle problem. You'd have a surge. You'd have a change in idle. It'd go up and down and up and down. And that would be covered under warranty because you have an emissions control warranty, and that's covered under that. Okay. Oh, I would love to see that piece of paper. And again, hey, why don't you write down all them services and just tell me how much each one of them is out the door and just sign your name on your business card for me, please?
Well, you know, they have a brochure. It tells you, like you were saying, under normal conditions, this, and then unnormal conditions, a whole lot more, you know, with a lot more expense.
Well,
so you're saying that doesn't affect the warranty. They can't hold you to it if you don't. Do what they want you
if
to.
You do what the owner's manual says, there is nothing they can do to you. Now, you have 100,000 coolant in there, 100,000 mile coolant. You have 100,000 mile transmission fluid. Now, let me change it, okay? Sid, you have 100,000 mile spark plugs too. Sid, I don't want you to go 100,000 miles because it's not in your best interest, but I don't want you to change it every 30. I don't want you to do it at 60, but I want you to tuck yourself up underneath that 100. So about 85 or 90. At the beginning of the last summer, before you hit 100, okay? Sid, I want you to come in. I want to do the plugs a little early because I don't want to have to jackhammer them out. That happens a lot. They freeze up in there, and then we have to jackhammer all the spark plugs out. Sid, I want to change, and I want you to go in through the summertime with fresh fluid because you're not going to hit 100,000 until the following summer, so this will be your last summer with old fluid, and I think it's in your best interest to go through fluid with new fluid and new coolant. But if you're not happy with my recommendation, Sid, then let's just keep it at 100. Okay, Sid?
Yeah, you know, because I thought it was, you know, very misleading because when you go to buy it, oh, you don't have to do this for 100,000, you don't have to do that, and then... You get in there, you know, in a couple months down the road, they're looking to sell you, you know, unnecessary stuff.
Hey,
you know?
Sid, does your wife ever grab you by the hand and kind of yank you away from a conversation, or do the kids ever shake their head when you're talking?
Yes. Yeah,
okay, this is what you do. Sid, do this for me. Do it for you. Do it for all the other old... Next time they say, oh, yeah, no, that's not $100,000. You say, okay, excuse me just a minute. And you go get the salesman and grab him by the ears and drag his butt back to service and say, I don't want my car no more. Because he says that you told me a lie. He says that he doesn't want to do 100,000 miles. He says it's dirty, dusty condition. So here's the keys to the car. Cancel it and give me my money back, and I'll take a cab home and see how wet their pants get.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
See how you wind me up like that? Do you know what my blood pressure's like right now?
Listen, do you think I could cheat and ask you another fast question?
Go,
if that's
go,
possible?
Go.
Okay. I'm in the market. I'm going to be buying either a new Prius, which my wife, she does a lot of driving.
Okay.
And I need a car that gets good. But I test drive the new C-Max Ford, you know, that the one that gets 47.
Yeah.
And I was extremely impressed with it. You know, but I don't like to buy brand new technology right out the gate because I'm from that old school. Maybe there's, you know, something's going to go wrong the first year. Have you heard anything, or do you know the car well?
No, I would never buy that car. That's new technology. It ain't as if Ford's Babe Ruth and they hit home runs out of the park every time they're up at bat.
Right.
They've had problems with new vehicles since I've been a baby. So,
okay.
No, the answer is no. If the two of them, first of all, which one does your wife like the best?
Well, you know, she likes her Prius. A Prius and I got rid of it. And right. I want to get it. She wants another Prius, but I drove to see it and it was so much more powerful.
Nope. Listen, Sid, you mean to tell me, you just got through telling me it's my wife's car, she drives a lot.
Yeah.
And then you tell me, well, I like the Ford and she likes the Prius. Sid, how long have you been married?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay.
You're right.
and just to make it even, I'm going to say out loud, and hope your wife's listening, if she wants a Prius, Sid, you better give her a Prius.
Yeah, you're right.
And I'm voting for the Prius anyway, so it doesn't make any difference. All right, thank you, buddy.
All right, thank you.
All righty, Darren, you're up next, buddy.
How you doing, sir?
Good.
Ironic you talk about spark plugs.
Okay.
I've got an 01 Expedition.
Okay.
And I have an 06 Ford F-150.
Okay.
Both have a 5.4. The 01 I'm trying to keep on the road. I just dumped a grand into it.
Okay.
Had to put a oil filter adapter gasket and coil plug, you know, just some maintenance.
Okay.
And believe it or not, those plugs lasted me 150,000 miles.
And it's not uncommon because people will forget. And we've taken them out where the gap is as wide as the Grand Canyon, and the coils are all wiped out because the coils have been pushing electricity trying to jump that gap. But that's okay. They got another 50,000. That's twice around the girth of the earth, and I say hurrah.
Right. Now, after I did that, I was doing that in preparation to get emissions testing. Drove it around for about a month, and the engine light came back on.
Okay.
And now, instead of a misfire on 6, it's telling me that I have lean on both banks.
Okay. There's a variety, and obviously, what's going on. The oxygen sensor downstream that's in front of the catalytic converter, because both of the pipes on both of these vehicles, you got both side pipes coming to one. So that oxygen sensor's been yelling lean for a long time. The computer tells the injectors, instead of giving me just a I want you to give me a So the oxygen sensor says, lean. The school teacher, the PC, says, injectors, open a little wider. And it expects to see rich. But it doesn't. Give me a little wider. Nothing. Pretty soon, we've got the injectors spraying like a fire hose. And we still don't see rich. So the question is the O2 sensor lying to us? Is the O2 sensor bad? Or do we have a significant a vacuum leak in the motor? And I can tell you already what it is. If I tell you where the vacuum leak is at, if I'm right, where will your donation for Christmas go? And how much?
Wounded Warriors.
Okay.
$50.
Okay. At the very back of the motor is your PCV valve line.
That cross line, I replaced that.
Have you replaced the little boot?
Dealer part only.
The boot? Did you replace the boot?
Well, I went to the dealer and bought the part, and I assumed that would be all-inclusive.
Okay. Well, here's how to tell. Take a long piece of heater hose. you know, 3 feet, and start it up, and put one into your ear, and then just kind of wave it around the back of the motor. And if you hear, then you know you have a vacuum leak. And that will affect both banks. So if it's going to be one or the other, you truly have a lean condition that could be caused by low fuel pressure. It could be caused by a fuel filter that's plugged up. It could be caused by something that's lying about the situation. Perhaps the computer thinks the engine's idling all the time, so it doesn't really add a lot of fuel. So when you're cruising down the road at 60 miles an hour, in fact, you're running lean. That's what a handheld scanner is all about. It's not a code reader. I don't care about the code. I want to go look and see what's going on. So if I see that the computer is telling the injectors to spray like a fire hose and that O2 sensor, I need to make that O2 sensor. I need to say, okay, the O2 sensor is stuck lean. I'm going to create a really rich condition. So I'm going to take the air hose off the front of the engine. I'm going to stick a propane tank in there, and I'm going to fire that propane up. And I better see the hydrocarbons go crazy. I better see that O2 sensor go full rich. And if I don't, then I get some carb cleaner, spray inside there a lot, till the engine almost dies. And then all of a sudden, the O2 sensor's still saying lean. It's bad. I'm going to put a new O2 sensor in. Now, when I'm done, what am I going to do? When I'm done putting the new O2 sensor in, what should I do?
Flush the fuel?
No. How about I go do the same doggone test? Shouldn't I go in and create a lean condition by pulling a big, huge vacuum line off, and I want to see the new one go down, the new O2 sensor go to lean, and then I want to add propane to it, and I want to see that new O2 sensor go rich, right? And when I do that, I know I fixed it.
Okay.
So that's the testing afterwards is commonly what's left out. Let's make sure what we just did is done. That way you can say, you don't have to say, here's the O2 sensor lingo. Your O2 sensor's a little bit lazy. I think it's time to change all 7 of them, 8 of them, at $200 a piece. They're a little bit lazy, and they're not known to last very long. And you're faced with emissions right now, so maybe you just ought to go ahead and do them all right now. That's what you're going to hear.
Right, and that's where I'm kind of sitting right now. I mean, I've got 165,000 miles on it. I just spent $1,000 on it, and I still can't pass emissions.
Let me ask you a question.
1 minute.
And you can't pass, we got to go, but you can't pass emissions because you still have the check engine light on, and you can't get it to shut off and then the monitor to reset, so that's why you can't get emissions. So we got to fix the check engine light, then you can get through emissions. All right, well, good luck to you, Darren. And if you're looking for a good repair shop, go to marksalem.com. Look at the best car repair shops, and you can pick one there. Every single one of my shops is capable of diagnosing properly your car without guessing with your money and not using words like cracked and broken or cracked and seeping and weeping and all those other words that just drive me crazy. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you why I don't sell Goodyear tires. It's a little story. Okay, if you're not interested in story, and I'm a good storyteller. This one, though, I'm going to stay the straight arrow. I'm not going to be ornery. I'm going to tell you the truth and what you can find in the newspaper for yourself. So it's a good story. We'll see you in just a few minutes, 602-508-0960.
And settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy. Master
Anybody
technician,
ready?
Mark Salem. Where the only two things
all
we can
right
fix
now.
Is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody, for the second hour of Under the Hood here on 960 The Patriot, KKNT, 960 AM. And I want to welcome you to the show if you just got here, or if you've been here, thank you for spending your Saturday with me. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Full service, everything, do it everything, and if they can't, they'll tell you they can. 38th Avenue and Indian School. So from South Camelback south to the 10, from the West 101 to the I-17, that's a big square area, and Larry Harker's holds that area down perfectly. No matter whether you have commercial vehicles or you have residential vehicles or you have private vehicles or whatever you've got, Larry Harker's can take care of that. They're a trusted name for quality. They've been around a very long time, so no matter where you live near 38th Avenue and Indian School, if you don't have a good repair shop, then Bob and Ellen, who own Larry Harker's Auto, they're the people to go see. Alrighty, storytelling time. Rack up, sit around the campfire, and I'm going to tell you when I'm exaggerating, and I'm going to tell you when I'm telling you the truth, okay? So you'll know the difference. All right. Many years ago, in the early 90s, the Salem family, me, bought a big motorhome and it had big tires on it, like semi-tires. They were 22.5s. The tires that came with the motorhome were Goodyear G159s. In short order, I had three of them fail. The first two were just rear blowouts, easy to control the coach. The last one, I'm heading towards Barstow, California. I'm on an uphill grade. I'm doing 65 or 70. I'm in the right lane. The left front tire, which is directly under my tail end, under my, you know, my butt, underneath me, it blows. The motorhome immediately goes into the next lane. And then from there, I don't have control of it. It goes off the road to the left, where there's a cliff that goes down for a mile and a half, and I'm exaggerating, but it was deep. I got the coach under control. Lots of dirt, lots of dust, and I look in my right rearview mirror, and through the grace of God, there's a couple of trucks back there that have backed way off, and they're holding traffic for me. So I pull back down onto the road, and I turn on my turn signal. I get off to the right, and it was a good 20 or 30 minutes before I quit shaking. That's as close as my family, and I got my wife and my three kids and my two dogs in the motorhome. That's as close as we ever came. At the time, I worked for Goodyear as a technical advisor and also as part of their marketing and advertising, and I worked for the belt and hose side. But Mother Goodyear owned, at that time, the tires and the belts and hoses. They have since taken the belts and hoses and sold it to another company. So we're talking about Mother Goodyear. We're not talking bad about any of the Goodyear stores here in town. Those guys, those stores are run by good friends of mine. I'm just telling you why I will never sell a Goodyear tire. I'm also an expert, and I testify. Well, I say to them, Mothership, will you fix my motorhome? I got wheel damage, I got wheel well damage, I've got damage where the tire blew up. Nope. But the local reps say to me, Mark, we understand the value of you being on our partner. So, Mark, how much damage do you have? Well, I got $800 worth of damage to my coach. I'm going to give you $800 worth of belts or $800 worth of hoses. Will that make you happy? It'll make me happy. It'll put me back the way I ought to be. Then I start getting called on cases, and the cases involve motorhomes, and they involve older people, and people are dying right and left. One of them, a lady is driving a motorhome northbound on 89 outside of Gila Bend going north up to the 10. The left front tire blows. She crosses the center line. She kills a car. She hits a car head on. And the husband and the wife in the car, they had just got married. And the lady died. The husband died. I'm sorry. The husband died. The lady survived. And a lot of those kinds of things. So as we go through this process of lawsuits, I find myself working for the family, the plaintiffs. And during the discovery process, the attorneys ask Goodyear for documents, testing documents. We don't have any. This goes on forever. This goes on case after case after case. A couple years ago, there's a case here in Phoenix. And the people that got hurt, seriously hurt, were represented by an attorney up in North Scottsdale. A one-man guy. The problem is he's got a little tenaciousness with him. He's kind of tenacious. So during this process, we're asking for testing, and they put everybody under a confidentiality agreement. In every single tire case, Goodyear insists, before they give us any documents, that we have to sign this confidentiality agreement, which means we can't share information with other attorneys that have the same kind of case. Smart move. So today, we know something that has just, this is going to disgust you. Just recently, the federal judge, Rosalyn Silver, came out with a very public condemnation. After the last suit was settled, there was some information provided to the court, and in her 66-page letter, legal document, she accuses Goodyear of lying. They're attorneys of lying, which is one for the mothership and one here locally. They're experts for lying. And come to find out, and I'm going to give you this kind of in a way that you can understand. There's probably 10 documents out there about this tire. Goodyear has given one or two, and they kind of spread that around the United States, knowing full well that none of us can talk to one another. But in reality, they had all 10. But they accidentally gave one away, and one time there was this expert testifying of Goodyear's, and he said, he alluded to one of the inspections or one of the testing that he shouldn't have. And so that turned the fire on. So today, here's what we know today. We know that this tire was originally, after the paperwork has come out, this tire was originally a local delivery tire. This tire was never meant to haul 30, 40, 50,000 pounds on a highway speed. Today we know that the tire in testing came apart at 65 miles an hour. And when the speed limit in the late 90s was boosted from 65 to 75, in spite of knowing that the tire wouldn't do 65 and it came apart, the speed limit rating on the tire was raised to 75 and people continued to die. Today, the tire is still on the market. Let me change that. Today, the tire is still on motorhomes. It's been replaced by a G670 Goodyear. Today, we know that that tire at 35 miles an hour, loaded like a motorhome, runs 190 degrees. And I'm telling you right now, the tire comes apart at 200. When we take that tire over 35 miles an hour, at 230 degrees, it blows up virtually every single time. Virtually every single time. We now know that all of this was hidden by everybody, even to the extent now that the judge says that the case in Phoenix, even though they settled it the morning of trial, that the case in Phoenix can be rejuvenated, can come out of the ground again, or perhaps the people can renegotiate with Goodyear, because had that information been available, things might have been different. Folks, I've been living this since early 90s. That's all 90s and all the 2000s. And I haven't sold a Goodyear tire since those three tires blew up on me. And I've seen lots and lots of people die. And what I see here, and then now there's going to be sanctions. The sanctions are this way. 40% of the sanctions, and we don't know how much that's going to be. It's going to be millions. 40% of the sanctions go to the mothership, Goodyear. 40% of the sanctions go to their attorney. And 20% of the sanctions go to the, I'm not even going to call him a gentleman, the guy here in town. They also have in her document, she's got evidence of them lying under oath, lying at depositions, all of them. The experts for the mothership, the attorney out of Nebraska for the mothership, and the attorney here. But the attorney here says he didn't know he was lying at the time. He didn't know he was lying at the time. Okay, now I want to say again, the guys that sell Goodyear tires here, they're good guys. They can sell Goodyear tires. I'm just telling you why I don't. I don't like the mothership. They have clearly showed they could have settled this a long time ago. They could have pulled those tires off the market. They knew those tires weren't designed to go 65 miles an hour. And they let people die and they hid the truth from everybody. And that just doesn't fly with me. And everything I've given you is not tied to my confidentiality statement. It's tied to a 66-page document. You want to read it? Send me an email. I'll send you the link. You can read it for yourself. It's as bad can be. All right, who we got on the phone?
We got Les, followed by Tony.
Les, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Good morning. I got a 91 Mazda 323, four-cylinder.
Okay.
And I've got a little bit of a rough running at less than 2,000, so I did an engine compression test.
Okay.
That came up 150 on cylinder one, 125 to 130 on all the other cylinders.
Okay.
Is that enough to cause a rough idle, running?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Now, other guys would look at it and say, Mark, the difference between 120 and 150 is 30 pounds, and we're over the top, so it's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of 20 to 25% difference, if we can say that.
Okay.
2 minutes.
But I want to tell you, this is what I want you to do. You work on your own car a lot?
Yes.
Okay. I want you to get it to where it's idle and rough. Is that, and is it a four-speed or an automatic?
It's a manual.
Okay.
Five-speed.
So you're going to put it in neutral, and you're going to wait till it idles kind of rough. I want you to go buy a can of propane And you know those nozzles that you open up and you light at the end and you can solder pipes and stuff?
Yeah.
I want you to unscrew the end of that, and I want you to put a piece of 3/8 hose on there about 4 feet long. So unscrew the end where the flame would go, and there's going to be a threaded pipe there, and you're going to put this 3/8 hose over the top, put a little clamp on it, and I want you to put that hose in the intake, the air intake. And then I want you to get it to idling, and when it's idling, I want you to crack open that can, and I don't want more than about 3/4 of a turn open, but I want you to crack open the can, I want you to close your eyes, I want you to put the front of your legs up against the fender, I want you to put your elbows on the fenders, and I want you to just concentrate on the vibration. And the question to you is as you open that up, does it smooth out?
Okay.
Now, if that's the case, it's running lean, because we've just added fuel. So you have to find the lean condition. Now, another thing that you can do is you can make it pull air. So I want you to pull the air induction hose right off the top of the carburetor, the air intake. And I want you to feel that difference too. So I think you're going to find that the engine's probably running lean. And when you add more fuel to it, it smooths it out. The next question is where am I getting unmetered air? Where is it that this air is coming into the engine that's causing more air than fuel when I want a 14-to-1 mix? That's what has to happen. So try it that way. Now, if you get lost, go to marksalem.com and go to the FAQs and go to FAQ00. And 00 will walk you through that whole diagnostic process, and it'll help you out. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Les. And Tony, you're up. Go ahead. Oh, you know what? Tony, I'm gonna have you hold because Mark just made a boo-boo. I passed my time, so I'm going to take a break. And Tony, you're first, I promise. So stay right there. We'll be right back.
Intelligent Talk 960.
602.
The mechanic raised up from under my hood and he shook his head and said, this ain't good.
Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm Mark Salem, your host, and we've got Tony on the line. But Tony, just real quick, let's bring Tony up. But I just want to pass this on. On the rough idle, we were talking about this can of propane and this hose. Make the hose about 8 feet, 10 feet long, because you'll use that to diagnose problems that are you're driving down the road. So you're driving down the road, and the car starts shuddering on you, and you think you're running out of gas. You run the hose into the air intake, but then you bring the can in and set it by your right hip while you're driving. When you get it happening, you open up that valve, and if it goes away, you know it's running lean. So put a little longer hose on there. But Tony, good morning to you. Thank you for waiting. How can I help you?
Well, thank you, Mark. Also, I would recommend no smoking.
Yes.
While doing the propane.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, chewing tobacco is just fine. No smoking.
As long as the windows are down.
Yes.
You can't. You know,
that would bring up another story about when I was driving big trucks, because all the guys got together. You used to drive the truck I used to do when I was chewing tobacco.
Uh-huh.
They all got together and pitched in and bought me a spittoon that I could keep on top of the doghouse so I wouldn't put streamers down the side of the door.
Yeah, but, it's better just to pick it up and bring it to your mouth than try to hit it when you're doing 70.
Hey, I want to get to talking about spark plugs.
Okay.
But, you know, I really understand what you're talking about, what not wanting to do as far as sewing those tires that were coming apart. You know, it's 65, mm-hmm. you know, roughly around there, especially when cars today have the capacity of doing 90, 100, 100 plus. Especially when the speedometer goes up that high.
Yeah.
You know, it's just no tire today whatsoever should be put out there on the street for any passenger vehicle that can't go those speeds. Tested and proven so.
You're right. Let me just clarify. This is a motorhome tire. It was predominantly put on motorhomes. Although it ended up on a couple of NASCAR haulers, and they had problems too. And you can imagine why. This is the sin. The tire would hardly pass 35-mile-an-hour test, but it was represented initially as a 65-mile-an-hour safe tire and then a 75, when in fact their own testing said that it wasn't. But it was never on a passenger car. So those of you with passenger cars and light trucks, you don't need to worry about it. If you have a motorhome, a 22.5 tire on your motorhome or your big truck, and it's a G159, get that thing off. Okay, Tony, go ahead.
Right. Getting to the spark plug thing again, okay, but I heard you earlier, though, the last hour, talking about your blood pressure going up a little bit, just a wee bit when you're talking. I mean, it's understandable. I mean, look, we get passionate about stuff, but I would have to ask you, where would your blood pressure be right now if you had your fellow colleague, Mark Levin, sitting in doing your HR and your customer service at your shop right now? Where do you think your blood pressure might be then?
Now,
who's... is Mr. Mark Levin. He's here on the Salem Network. He does the nights during the week.
Okay.
Okay. Anyways, you can research that.
Okay.
Ask Jeremy. He'll tell you. But getting back to the spark plugs. Now, again, engines, as far as economy and efficiency, I still think the diesel beats anything. It has no spark plug. Okay?
Right.
But instead of just looking at how long we can keep our spark plugs in the vehicle, should we not also really look at when we put a fresh set of spark plugs in our vehicle? Do you think maybe we should, like, pull them out right away, you know, when we go down the road under a load? Because let's face it, that's what they do at the track.
Yep.
To really determine how your motor is running. It's like the know-all, tell-all of what your engine is. You know, you get the, you know, the guys in the pit crew, they get down there, they look at it like a jeweler, you know, trying to discern whether or not they get, you know, proper diamonds or not, just by looking at how the fuels burn, because, you know it better
right.
than I do. You want to have coffee on the outside, cream in the center,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make sure you got the best horsepower coming out of that engine. Isn't that, should we do that? Put a fresh set of spark plugs in there, run it down the road, pull them out and look at it, and that's really going to tell us,
okay.
as a consumer, you know, hey, we got a cylinder maybe going bad, you know, and then we can start researching it from there.
Okay, and you're right. Let me tell you firsthand how NASCAR does it. NASCAR during time trials, and I tell you this because I was the NASCAR consumer crew chief for 3 years, so I know about the inner workings and the mechanical aspect. On the last lap, after they've already done their time, they're allowed to go around the clock one more time, and they do it on wide open throttle. They turn the engine off when they're entering the pit road, and then they come to a stop, and it's at that time they pull the plugs and look at them. Now, there's a big difference. A couple of things. Number one, the fuel is completely different between what's at NASCAR and what all of you have in your car, except for my wife, and I give her something special. And the second thing is they don't have catalytic converters, but I want to suggest to you that there's one better place to look. It's not something that you can do, but you can have done. There is time frames within the computer that tell us instantaneously how this engine is running, and they call that, this is going to be like trim. It's going to be instantaneous trim. How is the fuel and air ratio working here? And from a 1 to 10 scale, we want it to be right in the middle, 5. And then we want long-term trim. So I want not only the last 15 or 20 minutes, but I want the last 2 months. So I get two averages. I get an instant average and a long-term average. The fuel trim will answer your question. Now, the coffee, the color of the spark plugs is important, but here's what I'm scared would happen. Right now, we have so many different spark plugs that you can get one size that'll fit your car, but you know that you can get a size or two or three hotter and a size two or three colder. If you pull them out and they're running a little bit rich, then you have to know whether or not you actually got the car warmed enough. You have to know that you got it into what we call closed loop. Otherwise, the computer talks to this guy who talks to this guy who talks to the computer. So we have this closed loop effect. And then I'm scared that people are going to start trying to figure out, well, if I'm black on the spark plugs, is that because my thermostat's not opening? Or is that because I didn't drive it far enough and hard enough? Or should I get a hotter spark plug? And then I'm scared of that. But if you go in for any kind of PC work, any kind of computer work, any kind of check engine light, this is what I would suggest all of you do. Tell them you want to know what the fuel trim numbers were. And then have them explain to you what the parameters are. Otherwise, under the best of conditions, they're going to say from 1 to 10. 10 is real rich, 1 is real lean, and all your trim numbers were right there in the middle, 5. And then you say, is that where your car's at? That's a key question. And he goes, hope so.
Now, all that being said, now, would you also really need to have like a dyno test, you know, at the wheels, you know, to really, you know, get it all ironed out, you know, to put the right spark plug, to have the right trim, everything, you know, so at the wheels, you got everything coming out there that this thing's going to give you.
You can do that with the chassis dynamometer, of which we have one. Yes, you can do that.
1 minute.
Here's the problem. NASCAR is going to, if you look at the telemetrics, I think they call it, on the screen, it's either wide open throttle or nothing.
very rarely is it anything in between. A dragster is wide open throttle, and it's never anything other than that. Our cars today, we don't drive like that. Well, nobody in my family drives like that except my wife. But we don't really, we're going from 0 to 100% back and forth. And so they're checking the spark plugs on wide open throttle where this vehicle is going to run 500 miles. The color of the spark plugs on our cars is going to depend on how long our drive was and how short it was and how warm the motor got, how hot the catalytic converter got. And until it gets into closed loop, the computer's not even controlling the fuel. So until we get it into closed loop, can be between 1 minute and 4 or 5 or 6 minutes, then that happens. We'll be right back right after this with your call if you'd like to join us.
DMB Auto is family-owned and operated and has been in the Valley providing honest, quality...
Little monster with the polyglass wheels, the end result of the dream of Henry Ford.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. We're going to continue on our calls. And Tony, thank you very much for calling. John and Don, you're next. Hold on just a second, though, because this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. They have years of experience, domestic, foreign, import, gas, diesel. They can do anything. They can fix your lawnmower. Kurtz Auto is located at I-17 and Bell, just east of the I-17. They've been open since 92. They've been a member in good standing with the Better Business Bureau. Again, I-17 and Bell, east of the 17, north side of the street, Kurtz Auto Repair. And if you don't have a shop, I suggest you try Kurtz. And you'll like him, I promise. You'll like him. All righty. I have a favor to ask you. My wife just called me right now. I have a favor to ask you. If you know electricity, if you're an electrician, this is for you. A 3-wire 220 20 amp plug. So it's a socket, a female socket, and then a plug. What do I have on those three connections? Do I have a load and a neutral, or do I have a load and a ground? That's what I want to ask you. I'm changing out my pool pump. My wife has the paramedics always stand by when I'm around electricity. But I have two loads because I'm coming from two breakers, a double 20. So I've got two loads, and I've got one common between the two, and then I've got one ground. That's four terminals. Which one doesn't go in that plug? That would help me out a lot if you could tell me that. And tell me for sure. Don't tease me. 602-508-0960. John, you're up next, buddy.
Good morning, Mark. I have two vehicles, GM vehicles. They're 1996s. One's a safari van, a 4.3, and the other's a truck, 350. On dry days, I don't have any problem with starting them, but when it rains, both vehicles, that's a crank, but they have a hard time starting, and sometimes I can't get them started. And I've changed out spark plug wires, cap, and rotor, and spark plug.
Okay. When you did the spark plug wires, did you replace the coil wire?
No, I did not.
Okay. You know, the hard part here is I wish you wouldn't have told me that both of them did it, because that boggles my mind. But we have to determine whether we got a spark or fuel problem. That's first. So you know how to pull one of the spark plug wires off, stick a screwdriver in it, set it on the intake manifold, and when you crank the car over, you should hear and see it snap, snap, snap.
Right.
Okay, that's the first thing that I would look at. Now, in 96, the moisture would affect the distributor, of which you've just done all the work to. And the moisture would affect the spark plug wires, which you've just already done. Now, did you use any dielectric grease on the spark plug boots?
Yes, I did.
Good. Good, good, good. Dielectric grease, for those of you who don't know, it's like white petroleum jelly, but it's to seal the connection from moisture and from dust and dirt. Plus, it helps us get the spark plug boots off after 100,000 miles. So we just twist and pull. Otherwise, they bake onto the spark plug and you have to buy a new set of boots. So in your case, I'm figuring that it's almost got to be moisture. And the only place it can be is coil. And on those ones you've got, the coil sits in the top of the cap, or is it external?
I can't remember.
Okay, I tell you, on the 4.3, the coil's external. I know that. And on the 5.7, the 350, the coil is in the top of the cap. Now, on the top of the cap of the 5.7, the 350, when you pulled it and replaced that cap, you pulled the four screws, you pulled the little plastic cover off, then there's four screws that hold the coil on. You remember that?
Right.
You lifted the coil out. there's a center terminal that snakes around the bottom. It's a flat piece of shiny steel that snakes around the bottom and goes through the cover and down, which is the ground. I hope you put that back in there, and I hope you took that out of the old cap and put it in the new cap. If not, it's $3. What's that?
Didn't catch that.
It's after you pull the coil out of the cap on the top, underneath it is a ground strap. And you have to get some needle nose pliers. You have to pick that up and put it in the new cap.
Okay.
All right. So that could be the 5.7. On the 4.3, this is what I do. On a warm morning that you know it's going to start fine, I'd get a bottle of spray water, the kind that you spray the kids in the morning when they don't get out of bed, you spray them in the face.
Right.
Is that child abuse? I don't know. All right, so you're going to go over there, and I want you to spray down the coil and the wire, but I want you to stay away from the distributor. Just spray down the coil wire, have somebody crank it over for you, and when that happens, look to see if you hear any snapping external, which would tell you that the coil wire is bad or the tower on the coil is broken or the coil is bad. All right, so those are what I would try. Those are what I'd try.
Okay.
All righty. Hey, Don, I can't get you because I got to take a real quick break, but I'm going to get you on the other side of this break. So please, Don, hang on. 602-508-0960 if you can help me with my electrical problem. I have a lot of problems. If any of you are psychologists or psychiatrists, I'd be happy to hear from you too. I'm just kidding you. I've got one of my own already. So anyway, 602-508-0960. And if you want my email, ask me a question privately. You can. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark, M-A-R-K, at MarkSalem, S-A-L-E-M.com. We'll be right back.
Bill.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and just like I promised, Don, we're going to go straight to you, and I'll do my stuff right after you, and then I've got a couple other callers. But, Don, go right ahead.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
You know my big gray tow truck.
Okay.
Right?
Yes, sir.
They just pulled the engine out down for a month, did a reseal on the whole thing. I don't have as much power out of the chute. Just wondering if there's something that we could do through the computer on that, hook up to it without going into international and looking at $150 to hook up.
Okay, so you have an international diesel.
Yeah.
Is it the same as the Ford? Is it the...
No. It's a Detroit.
Okay.
The inline. You've seen the truck.
No. I have. I know. You know, I don't know the answer to that, and it's because... We do lots of diesel performance work, but on the three majors, which is the Power Stroke, the Duramax, and the Cummins. But as far as international is concerned, I don't know. But let me tell you this much. Don, recently, my brother's motorhome broke, and I took it to an international shop, and the bid was $6,900 for a transmission computer. And then the coach was towed to another facility, W.W. Williams, over in Phoenix, which is the Allison transmission. And their bill was $3,100, half of the other bill. So be careful where you go. You might also call, I'll tell you what, I called David over at Southwest Diesel and ask him.
Yeah, they're down there.
Okay.
That's where we get our injectors.
All right. And then the last thing is if you'll call me Monday or come by or whatever, I'll give you Jerry McLean's phone number, and he's the biggest and best diesel guy I ever met in my life, and he's out of St. Louis, and I have his cell phone number. So if you promise not to use any bad words, I'll give you his number.
Well, after Renee pulls her foot out of and I don't know anything. I'm like you in the same part. I don't know anything about electrical unless that.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Don. Thank you very much, and just call me on Monday, and I'll help you out. All righty. Did you know that the frame and unibody structure integrity of your vehicle is as important to your car as the foundation is to your home and as your spine is to your body? Unibody frame structural integrity. Well, Phoenix Body Works up north uses the finest frame and unibody measuring equipment that the auto body industry has to offer. That's important. You see, I've seen lots of cars come out of the body shop. Then they come to us because they've got a significant steering problem, and we check it on the rack, and we find out the frame is bent, the upper control arms are bent, the lower control arms are bent, the axle's bent. It's because the body shop didn't have the technology. So you can't be sure whether or not your frame is taking a hit till you put it on the rack. Phoenix Body Works is hassle-free, insurance company friendly. They know how to work with your insurance company. And those of you up in North Phoenix, Anthem, New River, they're located at 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley. 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley. So if you want some really, really good paint and body work, no matter where you're from, you can go to Phoenix Body Works. John, you're up next. John, how can I help you today?
Well, I've got a 1974 Jeep J10 that hasn't been driven for about 5 years. And I bought it new, and I just had it in my backyard, and I'm going rebuilding it and everything. I wanted to know, I heard you this morning talking about spark plugs.
Okay.
Now, the range on these spark plugs, as I say, it's a 360 V8, and it's 1974, so okay. It doesn't have any of the electronics on it.
Okay.
How is there some place that I can go to look up and see the range on the plugs that I should be putting
yep,
in there?
Yep. What you're going to do first is you're going to identify what auto, who's the Ford guy? Motorcraft. You're going to have Motorcraft and Champion. I would do those two. Okay. You can do AC if you want. And you're going to find out, first of all, what spark plug does it call for? So that 360 is going to be a common one. You're going to have no problem. Here's the problem. We can't really put a double platinum or a triple platinum in there because you don't have an ignition system that's going to work real well with those.
Should I change the ignition system out?
No, because you have points condenser now?
Yes.
Okay, can you buy a 360 electronic ignition from the factory and install it?
You know, I don't know.
Okay, here's what you do. You call your local auto parts store, and you ask them for a distributor on, say, a 360. Look in your spark plug catalog or find a spark plug catalog. Look in there and find out a 360 with electronic ignition, and that'll bolt right into what you've got. And the difference is points and condenser has a resistor wire from the key switch to the distributor. Right. It drops it to 9 volts. You have to take that wire out of there or use a relay because we need 12 volts to the new one. That's an easy exchange. Then you can take that.
I got a 12-volt system on this one.
Okay. Just make sure you have 12-volt feed in the distributor, the positive side of the coil, because I think it's going to be 9 volts.
Okay.
It's a 12-volt, but it's a resistor wire from the ignition switch to the positive side of the coil, which drops the voltage down to 9 because the coil wants 9. Uh-huh. I don't want to feed an HEI or a high-energy ignition electronic ignition with 9 volts. I want it to have 12. So we can use that 9 volts to close a relay, and we can run battery power to the relay and hopscotch it right over to the coil, and the same thing happens. We're just going to use the 9 volts to trigger a relay that's going to connect it to 12 volts. Piece of cake. Gotcha. So,
Will Napa, would Napa have that? I called the dealer, and they kind of laughed at me. I mean, that's a...
No, you're going to really need to talk to a wrecking yard, or you're going to need to get some books. You're going to need to find a parts guy that's going to sit with you for 15 minutes and identify if they made an electronic ignition distributor for a 360. And I'm sure they did.
Yeah. All right. Sure.
And then when you get the spark plug, whether it's conventional or high energy, then you can step up to like a single platinum. That those will work well. And then you look at the old ones, and if they're black, then let's go a little hotter. And if they're white and blistered, let's go a little colder. One step, no more. One up or one down,
I'd
that's
like
all.
I'd like to get a little bit better fuel efficiency out of the thing. I mean, back when I bought it, gas was 25 cents a gallon.
All right, here's what I want you to do. When you're all done tuning it up, I want you to advance to the distributor and go out and drive it till she pings. I want her to ping on hard acceleration. Then I want you to stop and retard it a degree or two. And I want you to find the edge of the razor blade where it pings once every 10 or 12 seconds and then back off one more degree, and there's your sweet spot, buddy. That'll give you the best power and the best performance and the best fuel economy. Forget what the timing says. Set it there.
Gotcha.
Okay?
All right. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All righty. Anthony, you're up next. What can I do for you?
Okay. I just want to answer your electrical question.
Oh.
You have two hots and a ground. The only time you would have a neutral is if you had a four-wire system, which you typically would see if you had, like, some kind of cool LCD display variable speed thing. It's treated just the same way as you would a dryer.
Okay, now.
With a dryer plug, you got two hots in the ground, unless you have a newer house where you have four wires, in which case you get a neutral.
Okay, now, Anthony, I took the double 15 out because I need 20 for my new pump motor. So I plugged in a double 20. So I'm going to go black hot, and I'm going to go to the motor, and I'm going to connect those two loads to the L terminal, L1 and L2 terminal. Those are the two loads. Then I'm going to bring that ground from the panel, bring it to the motor, and I'm going to hit the ground, and there's three lugs on the ground. There's two of them inside and then one of them outside, and I'm just going to hopscotch copper wired all of them. Right?
Beautiful.
Now, what do I do with the doggone neutrals? Because they're in there because they're in the Romex or whatever that stuff's called.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
Wrap them off.
Okay. Thank you, buddy. Hey.
What I would do is, I mean, where the insulation ends on the wire, I would basically just wrap it. I mean, basically, instead of having the insulation and then a piece of copper at the end that's exposed, I'll typically just nip it down so that there is no exposed copper, and then I'll just wrap the end with a little electrical tape.
Okay.
As long as there's no load on that wire, it's not connected to anything, it's just there taking space. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Wrap it off. No problem.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Two hots in the ground. That's what I needed. Now, I didn't get to ask him this, but the two neutrals go to a ground strap in the box, and so does the ground, but it goes to a different ground strap, but they're both the same ground strap, and I don't understand electricity, but that's for a house. On a car, I got you, baby. But on a house, I don't know. Okay, Jeremy, we got anybody holding?
All clear right now.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want to get a real quick one, and I can probably get one or two calls in, 602-508-0960, but I get a lot of emails on Monday morning, and I want you to know I don't mind that. Now, sometimes I won't answer you till Tuesday. Sometimes I go up to the ranch and work some cows, or sometimes I have some other duties up at the ranch. So I'm always going to answer you, but sometimes you have to wait till Tuesday when I get back home. I'm always home on Tuesday. Nevertheless, I want to thank you, because when you honor me with sending me an email, I think you trust me, and I think you're interested in my advice. And I want to tell you something. I'm not going to give you advice that's going to butter my bread in any way, shape, or form. Okay? I promise. I'm never going to do that. I'm going to tell you what I tell you, whether it was my shop or not. Come to think of it, years ago, when I've been on radio since 1988, when Evan Mecham was impeached. Many of you younger kids don't even remember that. But that's how long I've been on radio, because I got my start during his impeachment trials. So a guy calls in and tells a terrible story about an alignment fiasco. And at the end of the story, I say to him, you know, I need you to go to that owner and talk to him. What you're saying is ugly. And he goes, I am talking to him. And I said, how much did they charge you? And he goes, $78. I said, I'll have a check in the mail on Monday morning. I am sorry. But he was talking about my shop. You always run that risk, but you know, it doesn't make no difference to me. Bring him on, Jeremy.
We got Travis.
Travis, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I was just telling you, you talked about a 360 motor. Anything past 1975, bold Ford pickup truck will have electronic ignition.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't think the 360 motor in the Jeep is a Ford. I think it's an AMC. I think.
I say Jeep, but you can also go to the hot rod sections of your Summit Racing and all those Jags and get Unilite, Mahler Unilite.
You do. I'll tell you, I agree with you, Travis. The problem with the Unilite distributor is that there's not a lot of diagnostic information available. And so when we get a vehicle in with Unilite, and God knows we do a lot, we're incapable of determining whether it's the module or whether it's the Unilite, the light system, or whether it's the ground or the power, because of the way they're designed. So you inevitably have to throw away the distributor and just get another Unilite. The guys with the Jeeps, I rarely say go to Unilite, because if you break down with an electronic ignition AMC type distributor, and you're right about the 1975, you're absolutely right, then they can carry a rotor and a module with them, and they can change both of those out. But on a Unilite, that you can't really carry spare parts, and I'm cognizant that the Jeep probably spends more time off the road. Now, do you have a Jeep, Travis?
No, I've had Jeeps.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for bringing that up. And Summit Racing is certainly one of the places that I play in. Another thing you can do, if you want to look at some of the aftermarket stuff, then call Lopers. And
I'm into the classic Mustangs. I got a 70 Mustang Fastback with a 428 Super Cobra Jet nitrous oxide. So
that's my
playboy.
Let me ask you a question. What does the nitrous do?
It makes you go fast.
I know, but
It's like adding instant horsepower.
Okay.
That's all there is to it.
Now, but nitrous is not a fuel, so it must be some kind of an oxygen content.
Yes.
So
yes.
Nitrous oxide is going to be injected into the cylinders, which is going to cause the fire not to burn slowly, but it's going to cause it to burn long and explode hard, I guess, right?
Explode hard, yes.
Okay.
And I have what they call a wet system.
Okay.
They have a wet and a dry. A dry is when you add it in, and then you get to get your, if you got the new cars, you get a bigger carburetor or fuel injectors to go with the nitrous.
Okay.
I have a wet system. What happens when I push my nitrous?
2 minutes.
Nitrous oxide goes in one tube, and next to that tube is another fuel tube, and fuel goes in at that time.
Okay.
I find that much more economical to play with, and the power is amazing. I mean, when you're sitting in a seat and you've in a good car and you give it the gas, you get set back in your seat. With the nitrous button, you're getting set back again. It's that amazing.
And for the people that don't understand, there's a tank in the car, and it's under heavy pressure. And we're going to push this button, which is going to open a valve, and spray this NOx, they call it, NOS, or NOS. It's going to go into the engine, and it's like somebody just doubled the performance of the engine the quarter second after you push the button. Is that right?
Yes, instant. It's that quick, yes.
So it may not be something that sells well in Sun City, but if you're looking for some cheap, fast, now there's a little bit of a risk associated with it, because if you overdo it, you could blow the head bolts off of it, you could blow the head gaskets on it, you could cause damage to your motor. But there's enough people out there that have done it before that will give you the fittings.
I built myself a Mustang 289. I built it for nitrous oxide. The first motor I ever built was that one.
Okay.
And I drove it with nitrous oxide, using it quite a bit of tanks in my career of the little driving little tinker toy there for 12 years.
Wow.
On the street and going out and racing it.
20 seconds.
All right. Going out and racing it. The whole thing.
I got to wrap up, I was going to ask you if your wife uses it on the street, but I'm not going to do that to you now. I've got to go. Thank you very much for everybody. Thank you, Travis, and everybody else. I'll see you next week right here at 10.